Hello, welcome to the live Boxing News Opening Bell podcast. I'm editor Tris Dixon, joined, I would say as always, but we haven't really seen much of each other of late, but joined by Matt Christie. Matt, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going really well, really, really well. Looking forward to the new year.
Are you not meant to have that mic a little bit further away from your mouth?
I don't know. Should it be about there? Maybe that'd be a bit better.
Yeah, maybe even a little bit further away. I'm not sure. You do bellow, with all due respect.
I've had compliments that I sound okay. It's everybody else who's got the problem with this, with the sound on the podcast in the past.
That sounds exactly like denial. I'm all right. It's everybody else who's messed
up. Not my fault. I'm all right, Jack.
All right, you carry on denying. So, Matt, you've just been to a really quite fascinating press conference by the sound of things. What's happened?
Yeah, well, just went to a press conference in Angel in London, and it was Frank Warren announcing a promotional deal with Tyson Fury, which was astonishing. I thought it was just going to be a run-of-the-mill press conference. You know, normally we get a reminder about these things, and we just thought that it would be kind of a routine thing announcing Derek Chisora's European title defence with Bradley Ski, Buglioni, Liam Walsh against Gary Sykes on the undercard. And it was, and then when I turned up, there was a lot of guys from the national press there. It was very, very. There was a lot of people, put a lot of cameras there. And at that point, I thought, hang on, there might be something else being announced here. And it was, yeah. We sat down. We're here to announce Derek Chisora's European title defence and the signing of Tyson Fury,
which is massive and great news for Box Nation. You know, he's a proper flagship fighter who will bring in people to the channel from far afield and from different corners of different communities.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really, really good news for Box Nation. And I think if the fight they're looking at is providing Chisora gets past the Ukrainian in February and Fury gets past his 10-round international bout, is a huge rematch in the summer between Chisora and Tyson Fury. And for me personally, that is one of the fights that I'd really, really would like to see this year.
You know, you talk about that rematch, Fury, Chisora. The first one was on terrestrial TV. This one obviously wouldn't be. But it's an interesting fight, great fight, really good fight. But there's already been talk of it being a stadium fight. Do you see it as a stadium fight?
I think that's perhaps, I mean, stadium fight, you're talking, it's going to have to do the same sort of numbers as David Haye and Chisora, and that had worldwide notoriety because of the build-up story to that. I think it's difficult to say, even with Fury's terrestrial television background, I mean, would this sell 30,000 tickets, which is what you're looking at, really, for a stadium fight?
You'd hope to, wouldn't you? That said, I mean, obviously in Doncaster, McDonnell didn't do anything like that. It doesn't stop it from happening, but I don't know. Certainly very, very interesting, and not at all bad for boxing that we're looking at a big stadium fight in the summer, which is always something good for the fans. And, you know, with that period of time, just thinking that, you know, they're looking at June. There's already talk of Martinez, Miguel Cotto, June the 7th. We've got Mayweather on May the 3rd. So there's some really interesting dates coming up and some cracking fights. So fingers crossed it carries on like that, because it's a slow start to this year, isn't it? We've got a couple of small shows in Scotland at the end of the year, at the end of the month, and some international action, with Sky just picking up the rights to Lucien Boutet, Jean Pascal on January the 18th. But it's slow even by boxing standards, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's surprising considering the strength of 2013, because for me that was one of the best years we've had in recent memory. And you'd think that it would kick on from that. That's not to say that it won't, but certainly even at this early stage, we've got an indication of what we're looking forward to. You mentioned Mayweather there. We still don't know the opponent there for certain. Martinez Cotto hasn't been signed, officially. So, yeah, hopefully some big fights will be announced soon, and they'll be announced officially as well.
See the speculation that Mayweather's going to announce his opponent on February the 2nd on the Super Bowl, the day of the Super Bowl, like maybe as part of the halftime act or something. That would be a pretty big stage. Just perhaps in unrelated news, I see Amir Khan's flown back to San Francisco today.
just throwing it out there.
Just putting it out there. Just saw it on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, but I mean, we did just touch upon it then. Pascal Boutet, I'm out there on the battleground, right in the preview.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really interesting fight for me. Really, really intriguing. We'll go into it in more depth next week, but describe that fight in about 50 words.
It's almost a crossroads fight, isn't it? To me, it is. Like, I think we spoke about it yesterday. Basically, it's winner takes all. The light heavyweight division is red hot at the moment. Perhaps, you know, rivaling the super bantamweights and the welterweights as the best in the sport. I think whoever wins that fight puts himself right in the mix.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Lose and perhaps have nowhere to go as well.
And particularly in Canada, where you've got Adonis Stevenson, who's basically the third franchise there.
Yeah.
Which I think is great. So the winner can easily move on and have another big fight in Canada, where we know the fans are desperate to see all those guys fight each other.
Yeah, definitely.
Obviously, one stumbling block for Stevenson and anyone else is possibly Sergey Kovalev, who is featured in this coming week's magazine. So next week's, not the current one that's out today or tomorrow, in one of the fights that we most like to see, because Kovalev-Stevenson, there's no fight fan in his right mind that would want to see that, is there?
No. I mean, for me, that would be the fight that I would make. It's... every now and again a fight comes along which you can almost guarantee that it's going to have fireworks, it's going to be thrilling, it's going to do everything it says on the tin. This fight will do that. Even if it's over in the first round, you just suspect for as long as it lasts, the seconds are just going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Let me just ask you something, actually, but about Boot and Pascal. Boutet. And Pascal, if we just flip back to that one briefly. You know, there's been talk about this fight happening for a while, hasn't there? I think since they're super middleweights, now they're both campaigning at light heavyweight. Do you think that fight would have been better then, when they were arguably both in their prime, or now, when the stakes are apparently that much higher?
Well, you'd have to say that the fight would have been better when they were both at their peak, but certainly the significance now is that much higher. And it may produce a better fight, because both of them will be well aware that a loss at this stage could spell the end of them. And when a fighter has got that kind of the end of their career in one eye, then they really, really focus, and it can produce a superhuman effort.
Yeah.
Fascinating fight.
Yeah. Well, as I said, we'll go into more detail about that next week. But this week, in the current issue that's just hit the newsstands, we have a special Mike Tyson issue. This has come about for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it's before Christmas. Jack Hirsch, one of our contributors, filed a book review on Tyson, which I hadn't expected. And then the idea was to run a Tyson feature around that book review. And then Danny Flexen managed to snag Mike Tyson for an interview earlier in the week. So now we have a big Mike Tyson feature. We have a head-to-head Tyson against Marciano on our social media pages. We have a Tyson exclusive interview. Tyson's our guest column this week, and we've basically got Tyson content coming out of our ears, haven't we? What's the one thing that really stands out to you in the magazine?
It's hard to say. I mean, I was looking at it. I looked at it on the on our iPad, our digital version this morning. And as a fan, if you're a hardcore boxing fan or you're a passing sports fan, you'll have an opinion on Mike Tyson. Whether you love him or you hate him, you're going to be absolutely fascinated. You're going to be interested. And there's so many things in this magazine, in this week's issue, that will pique that interest, whether you like what you read or not. And it's what for me, is there's a lot of exclusive stuff. You mentioned Danny there. He's done a great feature with Mike. He's also got the column, which is, I think it's the Brutal Honesty from Mike.
I love that column from Tyson.
It's exceptional.
One of the best this year.
it's one of the highlights of the year so far. If you've got an interest in Mike Tyson, which I'm sure you have, you'll be fascinated to read this week's issue.
I think what astonishes me possibly the most about Tyson, the phenomenon, there's different areas touched upon in the feature, but from a personal perspective and looking at our social media platforms, so Twitter, Facebook, Google+, when you look at, say, for instance, Facebook, where we've got approaching 400,000 people who like the page, and you put something on Tyson up there, it goes absolutely ballistic. Yeah. I think there was a Tyson thing of ours that reached more than 500,000 people the other day, when we were just asking if he was good or bad for boxing. And it was, it's phenomenal, the amount of people that have such strong opinions on Mike Tyson. Now, you know, he's 10 years removed from the sport, 10 years plus as an active fighter. Many moons removed from his prime as a fighter. And still people have, people will ask, was Tyson good or bad for boxing? And you'll get empty replies saying, what a stupid question. And then they'll say, what a stupid question, of course he was good. And then there'll be other people saying, what a stupid question, of course he was bad.
Yeah.
So obviously it's not that bad a question if it splits people down the middle, as Tyson often does. It's extraordinary, though, the emotions that Tyson still manages to conjure within people now, all these years down the line.
Yeah, and I think you saying that, the interesting thing as well for me when I was kind of glancing over the social media, and you know, you can't look at every single response because, as you say, there were so many. But it's the unflappable belief of so many diehard Mike Tyson fans that Mike Tyson at his peak was some kind of invincible monster and absolutely indestructible. And any mention of any loss to James Buster Douglas is like blasphemy to them.
There was someone today who Facebooked and said, in his prime, Tyson would have ripped Ali's head off his shoulders.
Well, you know, that's somebody's opinion, isn't it? It's that kind of almost nonsensical arguments that you get, and sometimes there's absolutely no point arguing with a closed mind.
It's a bit like your arguments when you keep arguing the toss about Holyfield, how he would have always beaten Tyson. We have this, don't we? We go back and forth in the office.
Yeah.
But I think me and you about Holyfield and Tyson is right up there with Danny Flexen and Nick Bond arguing, not just arguing, although that is right up there with that, but arguing about who had the better career, Naz or Fernando Vargas.
Oh, yeah, that's another good argument, isn't it?
So there's plenty of interesting stuff, but I think the Tyson stuff, the guest column I think is really good, really, really good, really strong, and then the big debate I really, really enjoyed. Now, I wasn't going to answer the questions here. We were going to get, who are we going to get?
We were going to get Evander Holyfield.
Who is a friend of Boxing News, really, isn't he, in the sense that he's always up for speaking to us and always quick to return calls and speak to us. Give us his time, and then you try getting through, and next thing you know, he's on TV in the Big Brother house.
Well, that was the thing. You asked me kind of over, I think it was before New Year, over the Christmas break, if I could get in touch with Holyfield, and I genuinely thought it wouldn't be a problem because it never has been in the past. But then as time started ticking along and we were, you know, approaching deadline, it looked like we were not going to get him. It all became clear why. When you turn the telly on Friday night and you're watching that turgid show, Celebrity Big Brother, and poor old Evander's being handcuffed to an apprentice contestant and not really knowing what he's letting himself in for. He'd have been better off staying out and having a chat to me about Mike Tyson.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, we should have sent Paul Wheeler in there with some sort of smartphone. if there was any way to hide something, Paul would have found it. I mean, you're a massive Mike Tyson, you're a big Tyson fan, but you're particularly a big Holyfield fan.
Yeah.
I know being able to sit down and speak about his career is one of the highs for you in terms of what you've done in boxing. But, I mean, how do you feel about seeing an all-time great like Evander in the Big Brother house? And obviously he's coming under some real heavy fire this week with his comments.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, really. I mean, I'm not going to speak about those comments at all. I'm sure they're regrettable, but they're his beliefs, and that's the thing, though. I mean, it's as if he has absolutely no idea what he's let himself in for. It's no secret that he'll have gone in there for the cash. But my first reaction was, how the mighty have fallen. Then various other people quite rightly say, well, I'd rather see him in the Big Brother house at the age of 51 than I would in a boxing ring. And the guy has got to earn money ultimately, but it does just show that this guy who earned hundreds of millions of dollars, how far he has fallen, that he's having to rely on a show like Big Brother to earn his bread.
I will say, I mean, people say it's like his lowest ebb, and you know, he's sold out and the bottom's fallen out and everything else, but What I will say about that is if you read a breathtaking feature by Donald McRae on our website, when he interviewed Evander Holyfield, I think you can see when the bottom really came out of Evander Holyfield's life. Don got him at a time when Evander wasn't looking at big fights or opponents. He was more or less literally trying to get his own house in order. And he got Holyfield at an extremely vulnerable time. And the stuff that he got from Evander about the lawsuits with his children and his children's mothers and stuff was quite staggering. I've never seen Holyfield talk about any of that stuff anywhere else. So I recommend you just take a look online. And if you go to the Boxing News homepage at boxingnewsonline.net and scroll down to the McRae files, there's a box on the right-hand side. Go in there, and I think it's on the second page of his interviews. Find the Evander Holyfield piece because it is well worth the read. Really gripping and desperately sad. And you know, I think anyone who felt sad watching him in the Big Brother house paled into insignificance when I read that, I remember.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Holyfield's tale is quite distressing when you delve deeply into it. And the thing is, you know, he's on national television in this country, and you know, a lot of people are judging him on what he's saying and this, that, and the other without really being aware of what he's been through. And I know it's all well and good us sitting here trying to be sympathetic with what he's done. Ultimately, this guy has blown millions and millions and millions and millions that the vast majority will only ever dream of earning. But he has been to hell and back recently.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, I know obviously Evander's got a lot of the headlines, which is why we sort of nestled on him and why we couldn't get him for this big feature. We ended up getting Steve Lott, or Steve Lott was always an intended target, should I say, because Steve spent a lot of time with Tyson over the years. Now he's now involved with Iron Mike Productions, a promotional company. And Steve provides real insight into Tyson. He remembers the glory days, so it's quite good to have someone who was there in those sort of Halcyon days when everything was going so well. We've also got some absolutely stinging stuff from Larry Merchant.
Yeah.
His insight is, I think, brilliant, to be honest, and it really shows the other side of the opinions for Tyson to those who think that he was the best thing since Ali or even before Ali. The cold nature of Larry's assessment makes for brilliant reading. And then there's you and I. You're always going to be involved. I wasn't when Evander could no longer be reached, and I reached out to Buster Douglas and couldn't get hold of him in time. That was that. But I enjoyed answering the questions, you know, and I was pleased that for some reason there were some things in there that I've never written about that I've always thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was quite pleased to get some of that stuff out in the open. In particular, there were the things about, where was it? Not his best night as a professional. There, can he be considered a waste of talent? And what I was pleased about in particular with that was not just that I managed to air my thoughts on it, although it was only brief, but there was a real difference in the answers provided with that. And then Tyson also addresses that brilliantly in the guest column. For me, that's the highlight of the guest column when he talks about wasted talent and whether he was or wasn't. I really, really thought that was brilliant. And there's some cracking viewpoints in there. There was one other thing in there that really stood out that I really sort of liked getting off my chest. I'm just trying to think. Was there anything like you... anything like that for you in that process?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed looking at his career. You know, what was his best night as a professional fighter and why? And immediately certain things, you know, certain fights will come to mind. But there was another one that I've always been impressed with. I won't say what it is. I'll let people read about that. But there was one performance that I think has slipped under the radar. And I was glad that I could kind of put my point of view about that across.
Okay, that's interesting. What I wanted to say, and it's probably my longest answer there actually, was that when you talk about how Tyson could have reigned until the year 2000 because he was that awesome in 1986, 87, 88, people think that, you know, you see that those type of fighters don't have that longevity, but the reason why Tyson could have had that longevity is because he wasn't getting hit.
Yeah.
He wasn't in wars.
Yeah.
And so there was no accumulation of mileage until he started moving, until basically split with Rooney, stopped moving his head and was, you know, stopped training and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I've just started the book, so I'm 2.5 chapters into the book, so I'm sort of not really off where he's sort of confessing all to coming off the rails. But, you know, I think that was why many thought that Tyson could go on, not just because he was an indestructible force, but he wasn't building a massive mileage all the way.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's funny, we mentioned this. I mean, I've just went to that press conference and I sat down with Derek Chisora, who is always interesting company in one shape or form. And I asked him about his opinions on Mike Tyson, and I wanted to go basically for something to stick on the website. My intention was to sit down with Derek and go through each of these questions. And he cut me off more or less dead and said, Mike Tyson was horrendous for boxing. He's just finished reading the book. And any guy that tries to cheat in boxing, as in the drug tests and what have you, which is covered in the book, he says has no place in boxing. And he says, and then to brag about it afterwards, he said, I've got absolutely no time anymore for Mike Tyson. It was someone that I know that Derek used to quite admire.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Yeah. Okay. So Tyson's not having a lot of luck in the UK.
No.
In fact, that's one of the interesting, another thing that he speaks about to Danny Flexen for that interview.
Yeah.
Really interesting what Tyson thinks about the UK, the UK fans. And now you get that sometimes where people say, oh yeah, my fans in the UK are great and stuff. But Tyson actually labours the point, doesn't he, really well, so that you can see that the fact the UK fans do have a big impact on him and how he's perceived, that actually means a lot to him, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember the scenes when he was in Brixton.
Yeah, it was.
And it was just absolute chaos. And that was when he came over and had that rather farcical bout with Julius Francis. And the hero worship there, I'm sure he's had it in many places all over the world, but I'm sure that's something that he'll always remember.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It was almost like some political giant coming to the UK, wasn't it? So interesting. So you haven't started reading the Tyson book yet?
No, still haven't started reading it yet. No, I'm eager to. Now
I'm
more so.
Have you
read
any good books lately?
I don't know who wrote it, but I read an interesting one on Ricky Hatton that's recently been released over Christmas.
Yeah. No, I appreciate your comments on that the other day, the positive ones. Look, more Tyson stuff here. And I am glad that you did enjoy the book with Ricky. But Tyson Marciano is our social media head-to-head. Have you had to weigh this one up before?
Yeah, I think I have. Was it? No, I think it was Marciano and Frazier I had to.
Oh, okay.
I had to do before.
Who would you pick, Tyson or Marciano?
Over 15 rounds, you'd pick. No, I'd pick Tyson. I think I just think he was far more polished.
Size, speed, dimension.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, Marciano was tough, but he wasn't. You know, he was dropped by Jerzy Walcott and Archie Moore. Okay, he didn't look like he was going to be stopped on either occasion, but you know, he wasn't an immovable object. And he would have been there to be hit.
So, do you think Tyson would have beaten Walcott and the others?
Not necessarily. No, I mean, no, not necessarily.
Am I putting words into your mouth here?
Yeah, I mean, but it's kind of that old, you know.
You can't follow those.
No, you can't. You can't. No, you can't. So, no, I think, you know, Charles and Walcott were Marciano's best wins. Tyson doesn't have anybody like that on his record. Therefore, you'd put Marciano above Tyson in the all-time list. But as a man against man, I'd pick Tyson.
Going back to Tyson, I know we haven't deviated too far from him, but with Tyson, what's astonishing is when you look for his best win, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's so hard to, you can't back up really strong Tyson arguments with cold, hard facts. You have to back them up with potential and skill.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I was thinking about this. And I think, you know, Tyson slipped up against Buster Douglas. And I think the fight, arguably, against Holyfield and Lennox Lewis came too late. However, you go back to the fights against the likes of Tony Tucker, Pinklin Thomas, Tony Tubbs. Those guys were even more of a waste of talent, in my opinion, than Mike Tyson. They're all very, very talented guys. If they had carved out some kind of career for themselves after they'd fought Tyson, if Tucker, for example, hadn't gone straight into, you know, he tumbled into a pit of drugs and fast food and everything else and was off the scene for 2 years, if he'd have immediately got back into the ring and been a contender again and maybe won a title, then that win over Tony Tucker immediately looks a lot better. Same with Pinkland Thomas. Pinkland Thomas himself was in the midst of a drug addiction and what have you. These are all talented fighters and very good versions of those fighters that he beat. But because they themselves couldn't had no legacy to speak of, then I think Tyson's is affected as well.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Very interesting school of thought. I agree with you in many respects. And I just think that when you're looking at Tyson's career and... I'm not a Tyson hater. I'm not a Tyson cynic, and I'm not really a Tyson critic. Obviously, you know, there's lots of things that I don't agree with what he did and why he did them and all the rest of it. But it just astonishes me when someone tries when someone turns around and says to me, "What was his best win against? Who was his best win against?" There's maybe three or four choices.
Yeah, yeah.
And none of those guys are, you know, any great shakes at the time, or were any great shakes by the time when he
exactly.
I know people would say different things about Michael Spinks at the time.
Yeah,
but with hindsight, you know, it is what it is. For Tyson to be the level of celebrity he is now, when you think his best win was either against a faded Larry Holmes or a 91 second demolition of Michael Spinks, it's astonishing that it's gone on so long, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it just was his introduction, and it was, you can compare it to now in a way that if in the heavyweight division had gone stale, Larry Holmes was an underappreciated leader who was perhaps coming to the end of his career at the top, much like the Klitschko's, and you know the heavyweight division was crying out for somebody like Mike Tyson to come along. He came along and he grabbed the division and the sport by the scruff of the neck and took it on an incredible ride.
Yeah, I agree. Talking of the heavyweight division and being on an incredible ride, there was a fight in, I think it was April last year, when Derek Chisora fought Malik Scott in the UK.
Yeah.
And there was a controversial ending when Phil Edwards counted Malik Scott out. Some say he waved his arms off at 9 seconds and there was a debate over whether Scott could go on or not. Scott's promoters lobbied with the border control to have the result overturned. Not reversed, but I think changed to a no contest. Didn't happen, but it sparked a debate that is in this week's issue about whether or not there should be TV replays in boxing. I remember TV replays being introduced into other sports, notably rugby and tennis. And you know when they did the whole what do they call it in tennis?
Third eye.
No, something else.
Don't know.
It's escaped me.
Don't know.
I'm sure it'll come to me in a minute. Anyway, I remember these coming and people saying it would affect the flow of the game and all the rest of it, and when do you use it and stuff. What are your thoughts on TV replays for boxing?
On the surface, and bear in mind I haven't had a chance to read David Berlin's article as yet, but on the surface for me, it's got to be a positive, but then you start to delve a bit further into the subject. I think the Malik Scott example that you discussed there, you can quickly say, okay, you could get a decision in seconds, and it probably wouldn't affect too much the outcome of the fight. However, say, if we look at the most controversial fight in recent memory, Carl Froch, George Groves, what are we going to do there? Do we go and look at a video, and in which time Groves has got his wits about him again, he's had some advice off the corner, likewise Carl Froch has had some advice. There's a danger there that it could affect what was going to happen. Of course, the flip side of that is that Howard Foster's intervention, in the vast majority of people's eyes, affected what should have happened anyway. I know it's...
But then even so, if you have a panel deciding that, and they're not as close to the action as Howard Foster, maybe there's nothing saying that they'd be right either.
It's difficult. I think... I would certainly lobby for it if there was an incredible amount of research done, but I think what would have to be the case is that when these decisions are made, speed is of the essence.
What about like head clashes, low blows?
That's where it would work. That's where it would be. I think that's where it should already be involved now. I think we should already have that for head clashes and low blows. And when people have lost points, that could ultimately have an effect on the decision and ultimately have an effect on the result. Then we should be using the technology that's available to us.
Like Cyclops.
that's what you're looking for.
That's the one, isn't it? That's the one. No, Hawkeye. It's Hawkeye, isn't it?
I thought it was Third Eye.
Third Eye. No, it's Hawkeye. Sounds like we're naming the X-Men. okay, so there's some... it's really hard to know, isn't there? David Berlin in his piece has talked about when a fighter, or when video could be used. Should it be just used after the fight to reverse decisions and that kind of stuff, where it's been used... Apparently, it has been used in New York for that kind of thing. Or should it be used in the minutes break in between rounds? Or should it be used instantly as soon as something happens? I mean, there's so many occasions where it could feasibly be used. I mean, it could, if it was brought in and it was brought in too strongly, the fights would never get any kind of momentum going. Mm. But obviously, it would have to be on particular instances, fight-ending moments, that kind of stuff.
I think there's so many grey areas at the moment that I think if it's going to be implemented, it needs to be implemented slowly and just start with something in between rounds. Somebody looks at it in between rounds, and then see how that works out before we think about questioning referees' decisions with instant replay.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Matt. Well, it's been a pleasure. I know you've enjoyed getting the heavyweight stuff out there. next week we'll be back. We'll be looking more into Jean Pascal's bout with Lucien Boutte in the biggest fight of the year so far. That's probably not saying much given that we're only going to be 2 or 3 weeks in, but it is still a big, big fight, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
And so we'll be analysing that. And then next week we'll also be able to, we'll talk a little bit more about the feedback we get from this Tyson issue. And we're also looking ahead in the digital and print magazines at the 20 fights that we would like to see in 2014. So this is park promotional differences to one side. Let all the managers get on well with one another. Let the fighters want to prove who number one is and what fights are we left with. And I think our batch of 20 is very good. And in the meantime, if you want to contact us on Twitter at BoxingNewsEd or at Matt C. Boxing News, send us the fights that you'd like to see in 2014, and we'll give you a shout out next week's podcast. For now, thanks again for joining us. It's been emotional. Wonder where Evander Holyfield will be this time next week.
Oh, back home if he's got any sense.
On the blower to you, returning some calls. I wonder where Mike Tyson will be this time next week, which is something we've often said over the years.
Yeah.
Wonder if he'll be able to come back to the UK. In fact, we need to find out if he's going to be doing his shows here in March. We know he's going to be trying to get back here. As soon as we find out anything, we'll of course let you know. In the meantime, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next week.